Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm here to present AB 155, which would require that the California Debt and Investment Advisory Commission, commonly known as CDAC, to review and approve municipal bankruptcy filings in California. In accordance to federal law, a state must expressly provide an authorization for a local public entity to file for municipal bankruptcy, and each state is responsible for establishing guidelines to see it, to see that they see fit. 22 states currently do not allow any kind of municipal bankruptcy. 16 states allow a form of a Chapter 9 bankruptcy, but in some form, but they have some sort of regulations over the process. California is just one of 12 states that provide blanket authorization with no questions asked. AB 155 will move California into this category of states, which provides some level of oversight for this process. Some have argued that this is an issue for local government and that municipal bankruptcy is rarely used and there is no need for this bill. I would like to take some time to address some of these concerns. First, on the issue of local control, I would like to say that as someone who spent 10 years in local government as a former council member and a former mayor, I do take those concerns of local control very seriously. However, I firmly believe that municipal bankruptcy has profound impacts on communities and that it should only be used as a last resort. I also believe that AB 155 goes a long way in reassuring the residents of California that Chapter 9 bankruptcy will only be used after all options have been exhausted. California is currently enduring one of the worst economic downturns of our time, and many cities are underfunding their pension obligations, and for the first time in our nation's history, a city has pursued municipal bankruptcy as a means of breaking a contract with public service employees. I believe that the conditions in California have changed and that it is time to reevaluate our current policy. With me today to discuss some of these issues related to this bill is Krista Boma of the California Professional Firefighters and Caitlin Vega from the California Labor Federation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Christy Bauma representing the California Professional Firefighters, pleased to support and co-sponsor this measure. The firefighters believe that a municipal bankruptcy is devastating to a community, not just the folks that work for that community, but every resident, every business owner. And what we see in this grand economic times is challenges facing local governments, and we are mystified that there would be any other reason to have a state overview process than to make sure that all avenues are pursued and examined before you go to the lose-lose-lose situation of filing for bankruptcy. I think if you talk to anybody in personal bankruptcy, you talk to the County of Orange, who has been through a bankruptcy, if any of those folks were honest with you, nobody wins under that scenario. You try to reorganize your debts, but the community remembers for years to come. You know, the city of Richmond, the Richmond School District, their bond rating 20 years later is still higher than everyone else in the state of California due to that bankruptcy filing. So should bankruptcy be prohibited for municipalities? That's not what we're here saying. Absolutely not. But should a municipality take every measure and effort to avoid having to take that step? That's what we believe. That's why we're supporting this bill, and we ask that you do the same.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Frain. I'm here representing the deputy sheriffs of Sacramento County, Orange County, Anaheim Police Association, State Coalition of Probation Organizations, and the Sacramento chapter of the Fraternal Order of Police. We've all witnessed corporate America and the immediate last couple of years, what they've done to their obligations, not only to other companies, but mainly to employees, to avoid paying benefits they guaranteed through collective bargaining. Public entities are a little different than corporate America. They have a higher standard. One of the things to consider is that public employees generally have set aside cash raises to bargain for health care and pensions. For anyone to intentionally absolve their obligations, whether it's public or private, is wrong. Certainly public entities have a higher standard, and what this bill does, it's not stating anything, it's just saying let's take another look, that they've exhausted every possibility to to maintain their promises and obligations, not only to the public, but for their employees. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Caitlin Vega with the California Labor Federation, also here in strong support of this bill. When we begin hearing from our unions about how strongly they were afraid that cities and counties that they work for would be considering bankruptcy as a way of voiding labor contracts, we began to look at what other states do, and we realized that California is one of just 12 states that has an entirely unregulated bankruptcy process and doesn't have any kind of state involvement or oversight. And, you know, for the Labor Federation and our unions, the ability to collectively bargain, the ability to sit down at a table and negotiate with your employer and maintain that commitment by both sides is core to what we stand for and believe in. And we don't believe that there should be a blanket way to break all labor agreements, get out of all of those obligations, beyond, and that's not even looking at kind of all of the other ways that we see bankruptcy as being devastating to an entire community. And so what we've tried to do here is craft a bill that creates a process for the parties to sit down and have some conversations, to have some review, to have alternatives provided, and just to ensure that municipal bankruptcy be used as a last resort, which we think is what most people want anyway. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members, Randy Perry there and Reed & Associates on behalf of CAL FIRE, PORAC, and the California Association of Highway Patrol, with strong support of this measure for earlier statements.
Madam Chair and Senators, Terry Brennan on behalf of the Service Employees International Union. Not having some sort of state review presumes that a municipal bankruptcy has no impact on state and local finances, and we see it completely differently. It's just another layer of protection and oversight. We support the bill.
Madam Chair, Member Cesar Diaz on behalf of the State Building and Construction Trades Council, also in support.
Madam Chair and members, Dolores Duran Flores with the California School Employees Association. We're also here in support.
Madam Chair and members, John Decker with, I'm the Executive Director of CDAC on behalf of its chair, State Treasurer Bill Lockyer. He's supportive of the bill because of the potential effect bankruptcy has on state and local finances.
Are there other witnesses in support? Are there witnesses in opposition?
Madam Chair, Dwight Stenbach and League of California Cities, we are opposed to the measure also.
David, you need to move
from a strictly on a policy standpoint, we can't see anything that a commission can bring to a bankruptcy process that isn't already provided and can be provided by a bankruptcy court. And it's bankruptcy judges are trained in this area. They are they have the expertise to make these decisions, these difficult financial decisions. That's where it should remain, and for that reason, we're opposed to the bill. I have with me the mayor of Vallejo, Mayor Osby Davis, also.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We also have with us Mark Levinson, our bankruptcy attorney, who will at least explain briefly what the process is in a bankruptcy. But I'm pleased to note that there is a real concern about local control and not having filed a bankruptcy petition until all avenues have been exhausted. That's exactly what Vallejo did. But I also want to remind the committee that the bankruptcy court makes such a determination that all avenues have been exhausted prior to the filing of a bankruptcy petition before it allows us to file a bankruptcy petition. The County of Orange is a clear example of that. The County of Orange filed a bankruptcy petition, and the bankruptcy court found that they were not insolvent. There are adequate procedures available to safeguard the rights of the labor unions as well as government. I want to just give you a few facts so that you will feel comfortable. And I don't believe that any city would file a bankruptcy petition just to avoid contracts. Why? Because it's too exhaustive, too expensive, it's embarrassing, it's time-consuming, and it serves nobody's best interest. everybody loses. I agree with that statement. But just to give you a few facts about City of Vallejo, in 2005-2006, we operated with a $3.2 million deficit. 2006-2007, we operated with a $4.2 million deficit. In 2007-2008, we projected a $5.3 million deficit, which turned into an $11 million deficit. The city itself initiated $10 million in cuts between 2003 and 2007 to avoid filing a bankruptcy petition. The city cut positions, 56 positions in 2007, between 2007 and 2008. It also cut 46 positions the year before, cutting over 100 positions in 2 years to try to avoid the filing of a bankruptcy petition. The city, in addition, cut all funding to our senior citizens, all funding to youth, all funding to parks, all funding to libraries, all funding to symphonies, all funding to our museums. And we reduced funding for street paving, tree trimming, and street cleaning to the minimum maintenance of effort level. In the first 6 months of my term, I took office in December of 2007. The first 6 months of my term was almost spent entirely on a daily basis dealing with negotiations in an effort to avoid the filing of a bankruptcy petition. It is not something that I believe that we should do, and I'm from the old school. You make a deal, you honor the deal. And we did everything we could to try and make sure that that deal worked. We even looked at the possibility of financing our way out of debt.
Are you Ospie Davis?
Yes, I am.
Well, bless your heart.
We ended up after 3 months of negotiation, we ended up with a temporary deal. That temporary deal was to bide us over until June 30th, when we would have an opportunity to try and come up with a permanent agreement, again to avoid filing a bankruptcy petition. That agreement indicated, that temporary agreement was had wording that said, if in fact we have the ability to, we want to restore those services we cut to community-based organizations. We wanted to be able to pave our streets and trim our trees and still provide a competitive wage for our employees. That was an agreement between the unions and the city. Well, during the next 3 months, we were unable to reach an agreement. And as a matter of fact, on March 3rd, after trying and trying and trying again, including having a mediator brought in and working with us to try and resolve the issues of our financial situation, including allowing our books to be examined by an independent person hired by the unions to determine our solvency, we ended up passing a resolution to file a bankruptcy petition on March 3rd. Even though we did that, on March 4th, we again commenced, myself included, negotiations with the unions to try and still work out a deal before we filed the petition. That went on for 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, we still were not able to reach an agreement. We were running out of time, and we had clearly run out of money. We filed a bankruptcy petition on May 23rd. Even though we filed the petition on May 23rd, we continued to negotiate. And we have to this day, as I sit here, we are still negotiating with the unions, trying to work out a deal to avoid the rejection of contracts. A deal has not yet been reached, even though we're still working on it. I'm still hopeful that we still may be able to reach an agreement. I'm an eternal optimist, and I believe that we'll be able to do it if people would sit down, put their political issues in their back pocket, sit on them, and deal with the real issues of providing public services for people in our communities. During the process of our bankruptcy petition, we in fact reached an agreement with police and with our comprehensive management employees, and we have structured a deal, and that deal is in place. We reached that deal some months in the past. I highlight that to say that it points out that, again, we're doing everything we can to avoid breaking contracts and trying to work out our agreement. We could have just filed a bankruptcy petition in May of 2008 and did nothing else but wait for the bankruptcy court, but we have not. Again, we're still negotiating, hoping to reach an agreement, because bankruptcy, everybody loses. I agree with that. At this point in time, I'm hopeful that you understand that when we filed a bankruptcy petition in insolvency, the bankruptcy court did not issue a ruling determining our insolvency until September of 2008, 4 months after we filed the petition. After having gone through our records, our books, testimony before the bankruptcy court as to what our insolvency was, our staff testified, unions testified, the court issued an opinion on September 5th, 2008, finding us insolvent. That insolvency finding was appealed to the Bankruptcy Appellate Department, a three-judge panel, who kept that issue before it for 10 months and just last week issued a ruling that it affirmed the finding of the bankruptcy judge that we are, in fact, insolvent. For your information, as of Monday, the unions have filed another appeal to the finding of insolvency, and that's before the Ninth Circuit. My point is simply this. There are adequate safeguards and reviews and reviews and reviews again to determine whether or not we're insolvent, that you don't need to add another layer on the beginning to extend the time even beyond what is absolutely reasonable. Here we are 14 months having filed a petition, and the issue of whether we're insolvent is still being fought in court. That says there's an adequate judicial process to take care of it. And at a time when it's clear, if it was ever a time it's clear that we're insolvent, it's now. We have $18 million less in revenues this year than we had last year. And our expenses are continuing to rise. So hopefully, understanding that judicial process, you will see that the facts that I've just provided to you demonstrate that there is an adequate procedure and a judicial process to safeguard the interests of the labor and of government. And hopefully the facts will clearly point out to you that not only is this bill an attempt to insert political issues into a judicial age-old process that has been adequate, tested, and proven, it's absolutely unnecessary. And with that, I would ask that Mr. Mark Levinson just give you a brief statement as to the judicial process for bankruptcy.
I'm here as a resource more than as a speaker, but I'm familiar with the bankruptcy process.
Tell us your name, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator. My name is Mark Levinson. I'm a partner in the law firm of Orr, Carrington, and Sutcliffe. We are counsel for the City of Vallejo. I've been doing bankruptcy law for 35 years. On the debtor side, the creditor side, you name it, I've done it. The job of any good bankruptcy lawyer is to keep his or her client out of bankruptcy. We try to do workouts. We try to stay out of the bankruptcy court because once you get into court, you never know what's going to happen. You're submitting yourself to a judge who doesn't care nearly as much about your city or is your corporation as you do. So you always try to cut a deal and stay out. That's what we did in Vallejo. We tried our best. We simply couldn't do it. As the mayor said, the city ran out of money. It ran out of time. We filed on May 23rd. We were about to enter the fiscal year with no reserves and an unbalanced budget to the tune of $10 million. We had no choice because under California law, as you probably know, we couldn't enter the new year and borrow from the restricted funds if we knew we couldn't pay them back, and we couldn't. Plus, we didn't have enough money to make our first payroll in July. Let me tell you about the process that we face in bankruptcy, because the bankruptcy code doesn't favor filing by cities. And notice, Vallejo is the only city in California that's filed. Everyone watches, but no one has filed. I have counseled cities not to file because they don't need to. I can tell you about Half Moon Bay, which is on the record, and I advise the Half Moon Bay, you're not insolvent, don't file. You can bond your way out of this, and it did. Again, you try to keep people out. The mayor said he's an optimist. I should add that every bankruptcy lawyer is an optimist as well. If you weren't, you couldn't get out of bed in the morning. In order to qualify to file for bankruptcy, to be eligible, you have to meet certain standards that are set in the bankruptcy code. One of them, as the mayor alluded to, is the city has to be insolvent. Insolvent isn't defined by a balance sheet because it doesn't matter what your parks are worth because you can't sell them anyway. It really has to do with cash flow. Can you pay your bills now? Can you pay your bills later? The city of the mayor, I actually have to disagree with my client. It wasn't Orange County. It was the city of Bridgeport, Connecticut, filed a bankruptcy case in the early 90s. After a trial, the court determined it wasn't insolvent. It was going to be insolvent for the, it was, its budget was a deficit for the following year, but it still had cash in its general fund, so it was kicked out of bankruptcy court. We entered into 8 days of trial before bankruptcy judge McManus here in Sacramento. We had countless witnesses. We had tons of documents, tons of evidence showing that the funds were restricted, that we simply didn't have the money. The unions are represented by very fine lawyers who had the opportunity and did cross-examine extensively 8 days of trial following the rules of evidence. What troubles me about this bill is if you're before CDAC, what rules of evidence are going to apply? You don't have people just coming up and testifying like I'm testifying. This isn't evidence. That's testimony. It's not the same thing. We had 8 days of evidence in front of a very qualified bankruptcy judge. And as the mayor said, after that trial was over and the judge issued 144 findings of fact, 114 findings of fact covering 42 pages of documents, and many of the findings of fact had 8 or 10 subparts, very detailed, cross-referencing to evidence, to exhibits, to testimony, to declarations, then the judge entered his ruling. We filed our appeal. It was extensively briefed. We argued it in February before a panel of 3 expert bankruptcy judges. And as the mayor said just last week, they ruled in our favor unanimously, saying that the city indeed was not qualified, was qualified and eligible to file bankruptcy. We had intense judicial scrutiny. The other thing that the bankruptcy code does is it assigns to the chief judge of the circuit, and we here are within the Ninth Judicial Circuit, which covers the western states, the responsibility for appointing the judge. When you file a Chapter 11 case here in Sacramento, there are 4 judges, each of them wonderful, of course, and the computer spits out one of the judges, and that's who you get. If you file in Los Angeles, you get one of 14 or 16. When you file a Chapter 9 case, the chief judge of the circuit, in our case it's Judge Kaczynski, selects a judge. The judge does not have to be from the district, but generally you expect that the judge is going to be a 10 on a scale of 10, which is what Judge McManus is. So you're not only in front of a bankruptcy judge who is experienced and facile with finance, which is what this is all about, but you're going to get a good one because the chief judge of the circuit is going to appoint a good one, and in the case of Vallejo, he did. The other requirements I'll touch on briefly, and then, of course, questions. Is that the city has to have filed the petition in good faith. That was challenged in the Vallejo case. We had testimony on it. We had argument on it. The judge found that the city filed. The judge found that the city filed in good faith because it tried everything it possibly could to stay out. The judge found that we negotiated with the creditors that we could find, but we couldn't even negotiate our way out of our financial issues because the banks, who own $50 million of our certificates of participation, said, we're not going anywhere until you have some sort of a deal with the unions, so go to court. And we couldn't even identify our retirees because CalPERS keeps that information confidential. And in fact, when we mailed the notices to our 200-plus retirees, we had to send them to CalPERS, which stuck it in their own envelopes because we couldn't get the addresses. So there are extensive requirements mandated by the bankruptcy code, enforced by a bankruptcy judge, which is subject to appeal, which is what's happened, and as the mayor said, will happen again, where there is already a check and balance. And to add another check and balance before that, before a tribunal that may be qualified to do it but certainly isn't qualified to conduct a judicial inquiry under the rules of evidence, seems to me to just, in the case of Vallejo, would have killed us. We didn't have the money to do it. We didn't have the time to do it. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, Jean Hurst on behalf of the California State Association of Counties. I just want to make 2 brief points that make counties sort of different in this environment that we're discussing. First, there have been a lot of references to what other states do in terms of authorizing its local agencies to seek Chapter 9 protection. Counties in particular are pretty unique nationally in terms of both our service requirements. In other words, we are the state service provider for federally and state entitlement services in the human service area in particular. And also, we have pretty stringent limitations on our ability to raise revenue. because of the constitutional provisions of both Prop 13 and Prop 218. So I would argue that while comparisons to other states may be relevant sort of in the general term, certainly in the specific, California counties are pretty unique in their service requirements and in their fiscal structure. So we don't act like other counties in the country. Another thing that I wanted to sort of point out is somebody in the proponent discussion said public entities are different than corporate entities. Yes, we agree. We are very different. Our obligations are not just to employees, but to the public at large. And in particular, from a county perspective, we're responsible for providing entitlement services to those who qualify under state and federal law. This is particularly noteworthy given that today, July 8th, the controller is continuing to issue IOUs in lieu of state payments, those monies that would otherwise come to county governments to provide state and federally required entitlement services are not, at least for the month of July, as far as we can tell. And as a result, the counties are required to front those funds on the state's behalf. It's particularly ironic that we're sitting here discussing local agency bankruptcy when counties across the state are scrambling now to provide funding to CalWORKs services, foster parents, adoptions assistance, food stamps, and those types of programs while we're discussing this bill. We are in agreement with the mayor. No one in county land, no supervisor in the entire state of California, I believe, relishes the notion of seeking federal bankruptcy protection. But we believe that's an important tool to maintain during these critical times for us. We urge your no vote.
Would you like to go?
I would. Yeah, it still works. Madam Chair, members, David Wolf here with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. We, too, are opposed to the bill. We certainly concur with the author, Mr. Davis, and other individuals that we don't want to see cities go bankrupt, and it definitely should be a last resort. But by the same token, we do just as strongly believe that the state should not be taking control of local government finances in any way, and certainly not with CDAC involved in controlling these bankruptcies. The fact remains that municipalities have major, major contracts that should the need arise, they are going to need to be able to get out from under. And bankruptcy is the only way to do that. In order for a city to continue to provide basic services to their citizens, the need may arise where they need to get out from under these contracts. And again, bankruptcy, in our view, should it be necessary, and again, we certainly don't condone it, but it's the only way to retain the ability, control, for local governments to do that and have that tool in their toolbox. So for these reasons, we'd ask for a no vote.
Mayor Davis, can you allow someone?
I have a question for the mayor.
I'm sorry.
May I ask a question before the mayor leaves?
Yes, sure.
Welcome, Mayor. And I think everybody's aware of the really extreme troubles that your city's experienced. And thank you for this microphone. You know, if this bill were to be passed and signed into law, wouldn't Vallejo's proceedings go forward? How would it impact the city?
I don't believe this bill would impact the city's proceedings. No, it would not. But I just have to be concerned about cities all over the state as well as counties. It's a process that's absolutely not necessary. And I think you've heard the adequate process available judicially to take care of this. If we had this in place, we would be 18 to 24 months down the road as opposed to only 14 months down the road having filed a bankruptcy petition to determine our insolvency.
Thank you. I understand your point of view. I'm not in agreement, but I just wanted to make sure that Vallejo would actually not be impacted if this became law. And I also had a question for the bankruptcy attorney, if I can do that now. And that is, you have a lot of experience with bankruptcies, and you mentioned Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Yes.
Did the state of Connecticut have any role in that proceeding?
The state hated the bankruptcy case. It had authorized bankruptcy. The state hated it. It fought the city continually in the bankruptcy case. And finally, it won when it pointed out to the judge that while Bridgeport budget for the next year was a negative $11 million. It had $16 million in the bank, or it was negative 16, it had $27 million in the bank. But then what happened, what happened after that, so it was kicked out of bankruptcy. The state of Connecticut has a law that allows receiverships for city. And what happened next was that city was put into receivership the next year.
By the state?
Yes.
And then do you have any other points of reference for other states and how they act when their municipalities go bankrupt or file for bankruptcy?
In many states, such as Georgia, Louisiana, I believe North Dakota, there is no authorization. And so you can go one off to the legislature and ask for permission to file. That's the way it works. Every city has to go in, which is counter to the way that lawyers practice because usually they have a blanket law. But, in fact, the bankruptcy code says there can be a blanket law such as there is under the government code, or you can get specific authorization for a specific municipality.
So
that's how it works in other states.
So in those states you mentioned, the city goes to the state and gets permission to file for bankruptcy.
That's correct.
California, there's no requirement for any of that in current statute.
That's correct. The current statute is a blanket authorization. If you're a municipality and you're authorized by your municipality and you satisfy the other eligibility requirements, you may file. I should add, Senator, that in some states like Michigan, with which I'm very familiar because my firm has represented cities there, there is a much more complicated procedure, but what has to happen is the local government has to cede authority. It has to declare a fiscal emergency, and then it cedes authority to a bunch of financial people appointed, I believe, by the governor, who take over the city. And then they run the city, and they make all the legislative decisions. As a result of that, most Detroit municipalities don't consent because they don't want to cede power to a bunch of smart financial guys who aren't elected by the local people.
Okay,
the city of Highland Park, Michigan, has been in that state for 8 years now.
Okay, Lois.
Madam Chair, Mr. Levinson, if you would stay right there, please. I wanted to ask you, since you've practiced in California for a long time in this area, and I understand and know the Vallejo situation quite well, having followed it for several years, even though I don't represent Vallejo, I do represent Solano County, the rest of Solano County. The suspicion, the mistrust, of one party for the other is well known. Do you see any changes in the bankruptcy proceedings that currently exist that would alleviate that suspicion or mistrust? In other words, one of the things I've heard is nobody trusts the numbers that came out of the city. So.
There was a great deal of debate prior to filing bankruptcy about the city's numbers.
Correct.
Which I don't know if that's unique to Vallejo, but there was a great deal of mistrust on the union side as opposed to the city's numbers. Mm-hmm. The unions went out and hired an expert for the mediation, and then there was a battle of this expert and the city's finance people before the mediator. Before the city filed, the union suggested at a public hearing that we somehow go to some state auditor to make the determination. And the city council felt, and I expressed this concern, that the bankruptcy court is an expert, a financial expert. That's what bankruptcy judges do all the time. One of the reasons I became a bankruptcy lawyer is you're always in front of an expert bankruptcy judge who just does financial stuff. When you're in front of a federal district judge, he or she may hear a criminal case 1 minute, and then the next minute they're talking about an environmental case and an intellectual property case. They're generalists. Bankruptcy judges are specialists. They're used to dealing with financial information. And, in fact, that's what happened in our case. The union's expert testified. Our people testified. The judge made his finding.
Okay. So taking it out of the Vallejo context, the judge certainly has the authority to request an audit, more information, whatever. And other parties have the right to ask for that as well, but there's no guarantee that the judge would necessarily agree with that.
The judge is a judge. Federal judges are independent. Bankruptcy judges are appointed for terms of 14 years. Judge McManus was just reappointed about 3 years ago. So for him, he's got another 10 years to go. He is not subject to political pressures. To him, it's money. and he's expert in reading these kinds of financial data. The way that the system works is that the debtor, the municipality, has the burden of proving to the court that it is eligible. The burden is not on people opposing it, it's on the city. So we had to go in initial pleadings and file mounds of data supported by declarations that the city was indeed insolvent. Then anyone who opposed that had the ability to challenge it. And in fact, that's what the three unions did. And ultimately, as the mayor said, we settled with the police. But three unions challenged it. Then we went through a whole round of depositions and all that kind of stuff that litigators do and I don't. But there were depositions taken of all sorts of people. The data was tested. It was crunched all over the place. And then we got to court, and it was argued before the judge, who decided.
All right. I have one more question. What is the major problem with this piece of legislation? Is it delay? And if so, what is that? I mean, it seems to me it's you still have the bankruptcy procedure. You're taking a detour for the moment to get more information, to have another public hearing, to do a number of things. What's wrong with that? If the judge is upset?
I have a number of problems with the legislation. To me, the biggest one, delay is a big problem. But to me, is what if CDAC, based on real evidence or testimony or emotion or political considerations, says that a municipality is not eligible? What if Vallejo went to you with this? To CDAC, with a great. I guess it's you, Senator.
Are you going to go?
And
no, you can't go. You have to wait.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
If you went to CDAC, you presented all your evidence, and CDAC, rightly or wrongly, says no. First off, of course, the CDAC has the right to charge you for the time when the city already can't afford to pay it. But the city says no. What do you do? What would Vallejo have done? People have asked me, what would Vallejo do if it couldn't file bankruptcy and it entered the year insolvent? What would it do? And the answer is, we don't know. We've never been there before. We know we couldn't borrow from the restricted funds. My law firm's advice is to the city finance director, you can't write checks and violate California law. We don't know what's going to happen. I guess we would default on the bonds. We would fire police in violation of the collective bargaining agreements, get hauled into court. But we honestly don't know what would happen. To me, that's the problem. If a bankruptcy judge says it after receiving evidence, then maybe he would say you can raid the restricted funds like the unions argued that we should. But that, to me, is the biggest problem.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Julian Vorish with the Urban Counties Caucus, also in opposition to the bill. I would concur with the comments from CSEC that California counties are unique and in a troubling situation without state payment and the responsibilities and duties we have to provide critical services to Californians, and so we are opposed to the bill.
Holly Fermini on behalf of the Orange County Board of Supervisors, and we're probably the only municipality in the room that has gone through and lived through this very excruciating process that was clearly outlined by the mayor and their attorney for Vallejo. And fortunately, we came out of bankruptcy years later, more solvent than ever, more efficient than ever, and I can testify to you that it had nothing to do our filing with getting out of any union contracts or any collective bargaining agreements from the past. It was truly based on insolvency. Their investment pool had gone belly up, and they could not pay their bills and had no other choice. So we clearly hope for your no vote on this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Gonzalez on behalf of the cities of Bellflower, Camarillo, Carlsbad, Commerce, Concord, Culver City, Diamond Bar, Fontana, Huntington Park, La Puente, Laguna Hills, Marina Valley, Norwalk, Palmdale, Placentia, Pomona, Rancho Cucamonga, Roseville, Vallejo, and Vista, and we're strongly opposed to the bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senators Alan Fernandez on behalf of Riverside County would just like to associate ourselves with the comments made by CSAC, particularly with respect to the differences and unique aspect of county government, and for those reasons we urge your opposition to the bill.
Good morning. Thomas Vu with the California Special Districts Association, also in opposition.
Amber Wiley with the Association of California Healthcare Districts, also in opposition.
Jonathan Clay on behalf of the City of Encinitas, also in opposition.
David Jones on behalf of the City of Santa Rosa, Burbank, Lake Forest, and Murrieta, in opposition.
Karen Lang on behalf of the Board of Supervisors in Butte, Nevada, and San Luis Obispo counties, in opposition.
Maxine Mantel on behalf of the City of West Hollywood, in opposition.
Mel Osgood on behalf of the city of Citrus Heights, which has a very sound fiscal basis, but believes that this interferes with local prerogatives in a way that's very destructive to our position in the state, in opposition.
Nicole Wordleman on behalf of the city of Berkeley, in opposition.
Christian Foy on behalf of the city of Long Beach, in opposition.
My name is Afrek Vargas. I'm with the California State Firefighters Association. Sorry that I missed the support part. We are in support. I want to be on record. Thank you.
My name is Deanna Furman from the California Nurses Association, the same as Mr. Vargas. Also late support, but we are in strong support of this bill.
Okay. Now I'd like to make a statement. Having served on a city council earlier in my career, I understand the need and desire to protect local discretion in responding to financial crises. However, I am concerned about the fiscal health of local governments and the state, so I do not believe that existing law sufficiently protects the public from the broad and significant impacts of a municipal bankruptcy. I applaud the author of AB 155 for starting this much-needed policy discussion and look forward to continue to work on this issue. I also want to applaud Mayor Osby Davis. Although we have viewed this issue from different perspectives, he has provided much-needed leadership in the city of Vallejo as they work through their bankruptcy. So bless your heart.
May I make a comment, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, since the author's not taking the bill up for a vote, this is just a broad discussion, and there's been a lot of interesting, ideas brought up. It seems to me that the state does have a vested interest in whether local governments can file for bankruptcy, and if their filing for bankruptcy may place liabilities on the state for running the schools or other public services. And I think that's important. But what really interests me about this discussion is what has happened over the last few years in my city, San Diego, where thanks to the economic downturn and other factors, there was, beginning probably 5 years ago or more, very intense discussion about the city's bankrupt, we got to just get it over with, let's do it like Orange County. We've got to revise these contracts, not just pensions, but lots of other contracts. And I felt as though, I felt then, and I believe it now, that the city of San Diego is a fiscally viable and strong city that, like the rest of us, goes through some ups and downs, especially with the economy the way it is now. And that it became a public discussion about whether we should file for bankruptcy or not. I thought then, and I think now, that there should be some kind of a process already established to put some order into that discussion and not just make it a soundbite campaign, not just leave it up, to my way of thinking, to a vote of the city council on a single day, whether or not the city would opt into bankruptcy and begin a disruption that affects every resident, every business, every property owner, and even the surrounding suburbs don't really have a stake in the city's finances but may benefit from related services. So I think, I don't know if AB 155 is the answer, but I think the state does need to have this discussion and figure out if in every economic downturn, if cities and counties may be on the verge of bankruptcy, totally as a local decision without any regard to how it impacts the state. So I would just encourage you to continue to work on the issue, Mr. Mendoza, and see what we can do to, whether it's the Investment Advisory Commission or some other avenue of state government. I think the state does need a seat at the table somehow.
Mr. Cox.
Madam Chair, let me just call to your attention that which, and members, that which Mr. Levin said. No city or county has the ability to put themselves into bankruptcy. There's a petition that's filed, but then it's the bankruptcy judge that makes the determination, as I understand it, whether or not the proceeding is going to go forward. This particular bill doesn't make a lot of sense to me,
because the agency that excuse me, that would be assigned to determining whether or not a city or county could go bankrupt doesn't have the ability to put them in bankruptcy. So as Mr. Levin explained to us, they would have been in quite a dilemma if someone had said, yes, you can go, and the judge said, no, you can't. Or if the judge said, yes, you can go, and somebody else said, no, you can't. We've clearly have created an impediment, excuse me, for local government that we ought not to put in place. And Mr. Mendoza, I salute you for your efforts, but it seems to me that things work out reasonably well. There is a process. There is a bankruptcy judge that will determine whether or not a city or county needs to be put into bankruptcy in order to protect the assets and the people that are involved. And so I'm appreciative of the fact that you're not going to take the vote today, but if you were, I'd have to be a no.
Senator Wolk. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've watched this bill carefully because I represent Solano County, and I don't represent Vallejo, as I said. Wouldn't mind it, but represent the rest of Solano. Mayor Davis really is to be congratulated. He came into this when it was well underway. There was a great deal of suspicion and mistrust. There were comments made by and intentions, probably, of the city management, certain council members that inflamed the situation, didn't make it much better, has created just a terrible and financial disaster of losing Mare Island, and just the economy in general has been devastating to the city. As I looked at the bill, there are four pages of process that is added on to the bankruptcy process, which I happen to believe, along with Senator Cox, is the process that the judges are chosen for their expertise. That's not always the case in law, but in this particular case they are, and they are arbiters of what is a very, very difficult procedure. So if you add then this procedure, which I looked at pretty carefully, all of which is under basically a political entity. No, there are six or seven, depending on how you count it, political folks. And there are two that aren't. That makes me very nervous when a city's survival is at stake. And I think the last piece of it on page six, when at the end of the first round of information gathering, the hearing, the second round, the next round is the commission at the very end of all of this, and I added it up, I think it takes, it's not clear how long it would take, but it's not going to happen in a week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks. It's going to be much longer than that. At the very end of that, the commission, again, this commission, can then completely limit the Chapter 9 bankruptcy, changes to a contract, the abrogation of contracts may be prohibited, limit the amount of relief to debt service. I mean, I really, then what? Then what does the city do? I just don't think that that's wise. And the real irony about all of this, well, there are a couple ironies, is that we're also going to ask the city to pay for all that. I mean, that's pretty awful. Do I think bankruptcies can be misused? I don't know. You know, the history of bankruptcy with respect to special districts, cities, or counties, considering how many there are 6,000 special districts, hundreds of cities, 500 probably more cities, if I got that wrong, 58 counties, and in our analysis, there are only three general-purpose governments that have sought this kind of bankruptcy. And in the past decade, only 18 local public entities, and that has to do with special districts, have filed for bankruptcy. And that has been during some rough economic times, the early 90s, the last time the state had a major deficit, which was 2002 and 3. So I don't see the overwhelming evidence, but I do think we're in a very unusual economic time. I do think that there's going to be a lot of pain that many cities and counties and our state is going to be going through. So I'm actually pleased that you're not asking for a vote today, because I would be a no vote as well. But I think over the next 6 months, we're entering different, uncharted financial waters. And I would like to watch this pretty carefully. So I don't want to see this go into effect, but I do think that we're entering different times, and we may have to do things that are different with respect to bankruptcies, depending on what comes forward. So glad that you decided to not move this forward.
Okay.
Closing remarks. Does he
want to
close?
Do you
want to
close?
Madam Chair, just again, I know we're not taking a vote, just to there was a lot of questions and issues that have arisen throughout the testimony. I don't want to take too much time. Just want to mention briefly, I know we're not voting on this. Just, you know, we do have a limit of we have up to 45 days, according to the bill, 45 days to come with some sort of solution, you know, so it won't drag on for very long. The city pays only if they find that, you know what, they still could, they're not really insolvent, or they could just still, they have money, they just have to do certain steps according to City Act. And just like the Connecticut example, Connecticut is one of the states that actually do regulate these kind of municipal bankruptcies, and they kicked it out, said you do have money, so go ahead and follow through. And that's the kind of setting that we want us to create here in California. And I truly believe City Act is the best place. The executive director is here. I'm sure he could tell you extensively what kind of work they do as it relates to municipalities and the issues across the state that they deal with as it relates to local governments. And our, you know, that TDEC is comprised of our peers, a senator, assembly member, a county first person, a city person, a treasurer. I mean, we get the people that are on there. But again, I think TDEC would have prevented would have probably helped out in the Vallejo case, because they were contemplating the mere act of bankruptcy would have set something in place where they could have helped them structure or whatever else, any other recommendations before they went to that point of bankruptcy. But, you know, I look forward to working with the opposition and some of your concerns and see how this bill can move out of this committee. So thank you for your time, Madam Chair.